What is up, everyone? We are back with a little news episode. Yeah, there's some news that's relevant for us to speak about. We got some Scream news. We got Quentin Tarantino news. We got S Salem's Lot remake finally getting released news. We got all kinds of stuff.
Blair Witch news.
Blair Witch drama.
I
All kinds of stuff, but Eric, what is up?
What's up, man? Glad to be back.
Yeah,
Been a bit.
little extended hiatus. Not too bad though. We did Maniac in March of last month. We did the Maniac Cop films, Lou and I did, and then me, you, and Lou did Out for Justice, which was a fucking a blast of an episode.
Yeah, that whole thing, just the rewatch before and the pod was great.
And to spoil it for everybody, if you're listening to this next week, we're dropping Kickboxer with Lou, and Charlie is going to join us for that one too. So that's going to be a full fucking house for a Kickboxer review.
Yeah, I mean, and you need that many people for a fucking masterpiece like Kickboxer.
Exactly.
And that's no joke either.
No. There's no hyperbole there.
No.
But yes, here we are. And yeah, first things first. First thing on the docket. Huge Scream news since the last time we recorded. We got Kevin Williamson back to write and direct Scream 7.
Exciting, in my opinion, super exciting
Or
news.
wait, is he writing or is he just directing?
I think he's co-writing, and but he, yeah, directing, co-writing, I think.
Huge though, because Williamson has not directed anything aside from like maybe some Dawson's Creek episode that he executive produced and created.
Williamson's the voice of a generation in my eyes, right?
He's the voice of our generation, arguably.
Yeah, I mean, the guy wrote so many relevant things for our child, when our formative years.
So right now, Scream 7 is still slated as being written by James Vanderbilt and Gary Busick. Not Gary Busey. And Kevin Williamson directing, and we got Neve Campbell is on board. And Dempsey is on board too. Dempsey got announced to his character from Scream 3 is coming back.
Nice. I think I like how Pantry, I mean, obviously we all just saw Thanksgiving a couple months back. Cool seeing a guy like him dipping his toes back in, right? Coming back. I think his character was a likable character,
I also find it funny though that he comes back and he's been to what's the probably the start of a new horror franchise and in the tail end of a horror franchise. 58
True.
years old, Dempsdog's back in the thick of it and got announced for he got officially announced though, right? Because you seem shocked by it, but I thought I heard this.
No, he did. He did. I'm not shocked by it. No,
Oh, okay.
he definitely did. Yes. He definitely did. At least from to my knowledge. Maybe I'm just thinking of our group chat, but
Scream 7 went from being the most, like, the biggest laughing stock of what was going to be a horror sequel to now everyone's all juiced up again.
yeah, I mean, the
It
roller
took
coaster
it,
of this
this franchise since
franchise.
Wes died. Wes has fucking shedded three layers of fucking marrow in the ground right now with the amount of
100%.
fucking shit that's happened.
A
We get a
lot.
four West fucking part five, which was it didn't feel like a Scream film to me, if you want my honest opinion. And then six again didn't really parts of it had screamish tones, especially the opening scene. But I don't know. There's a distinct
I
portion
think,
of what
yeah, I think there's
makes
a lot
these
that went
films that's
into it.
gone.
Right, for sure. I just think like the departure from Wes, and then I just think like maybe the setting, especially for this last one, the setting was drastically different than we had seen, you know what I mean? And I think that
Right.
plays into it a little bit too. That was it from, I mean, Yeah, I mean, I just think everything kind of plays into it. Like all the discussion behind the film of like, Wes is gone and they're going to ruin it. And then, like, I just think everything plays into it. And then when you watch it, those thoughts are in your head. And that was kind of for me as well. Like, I didn't hate it. I still feel like with most sequels, like, or like deep in franchises, I feel like, did it need to be made? Probably not. Am I going to see it? Yes. You know what I mean? It's like that happy,
Right, yes,
you're like in the
it's
middle of it. So.
so I mean it's taken quite a turn, for the better for sure, but also announced today Quentin Tarantino abandoning his final film, and it sounds like either he didn't want to make this movie now, he doesn't want to make this movie ever, but it seems like he doesn't want to. Maybe he's done and just doesn't want to make another movie, and he wants to end on Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. And I honestly, before we dive into him canceling this, if he ended on Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, I think that's a great way to end.
For sure. I mean, we might rank his movies and say that we don't like one more than the other, but he doesn't really have any bad films. And I, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, in my opinion, was, yeah, it was a phenomenal. And if he did end there, it's understandable. However, I personally think the world just needs more Tarantino, so it bums me out, but understandable as well. It's not like we're leaving on a stinker.
To be able to say we grew up during the time of a filmmaker like him is pretty special. I think it's probably similar to how a generation, two, three generations before us grew up being able to watch like a 30-year career arc of say like Stanley Kubrick, who did The Shining and Full Metal Jacket, and to be able to experience in to be able to experience like these crazy like big films, because say what you want, like yes, we were kids when Pulp Fiction came out, like I was 6, you were 9, but like beyond that, like I remember vividly when the Kill Bill movies came out, and that was in the middle of his career, and how big
For
every
sure.
time a Tarantino movie came out, it was a huge fucking thing. It felt like how I imagine people felt when Kubrick put out like say Full Metal Jacket
Right.
or one of his later films like that, like that, like he's already built the mystique of
Eyes wide shut.
Eyes Wide Shut, exactly. Like you just get fucking jacked up on it that, oh my God, there's a new fucking Kubrick film coming out. It's interesting, man.
I just think like, and I know you can attest, like throughout the history of filmmaking, I mean, you know how many films there are and how many directors there are. I just don't know. I mean, even my favorite directors of all time, Tarantino being one of them, like it's really hard to do what he's done. I mean, he doesn't have 50 films that he's directed by any means, but like every one of them is pretty much a banger. Like it's not, even like it's just tough for me to say that about almost any other director. Like I'm sure there's some people would could argue, but like the it's there's those people out there who talk about him being overhyped or they don't get it, but like I just think it's genius, whether that makes me just another one of the flock or whatever. But I mean, really, can you say that about how many other filmmakers can you say that about where every film pretty much is phenomenal and revered by the ma like so many people, you know what I mean?
No, exactly. It's very easy for people, and there was people that hated on Kubrick too. And
For
I know
sure.
I keep drawing that line to Kubrick, but he's the like that I try to think of like not a crazy amount of films directed, but meaningful for when they did come out.
I think it's a good comparison. I mean, with the amount of films that they've had, and the weight that their names carry, I think it it makes
Yeah.
sense.
And it's he has lived in the cinematic universe of himself for 30 years now, from doing Reservoir Dogs, writing True Romance, Pulp Fiction, Jackie Brown, then the Kill Bill, 5 years off, or was it 4 years off? No, it was 5 years off. than the Kill Bill films. And then, dude, I remember even after those Kill Bill films, because I'm not even huge on the Kill Bill films. I like them. But when Tarantino announced when there was the talk of Inglourious Basterds, I remember how, and especially the subject matter, because I love World War II era stuff. I remember distinctly how, like, jacked up, like, everyone that I was friends with, who was a Tarantino film fan, how, like, pumped up we were.
For sure.
Because, we had had the Kill Bill films 2003, 2004, and then he did, like, you know, he did a guest spot on the Sin City movie, did a couple episodes of CSI, and then, like, you know, Grindhouse, which was cool. Like, we were all pumped for that, obviously, with him doing Death Proof. But to get, like, a full, like that, I mean, Death Proof was awesome. But, like, we were waiting for the big next Tarantino film. And when we get that in 2009, I remember how crazy, like, those theaters were, people going, wanting to go see Inglourious Basterds. And then same thing, 3 years later, Christmas Day for Django. Like, people were fucking, like, ravenous for fucking Django. Dude, we went Christmas Day. Did we go together? I know I went with a bunch of people.
I don't know if we saw that together, to be honest with you.
I know BT was there, but
I was gonna say, I don't know if I was there.
It was Christmas Day 2012. We went to a fucking Christmas night showing. It was Christmas night. Like, so December 25th at like 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock at night. The fucking theater was packed in a big stadium style theater.
It's wild. Yeah, I mean, like I said, I mean, he has the way to do that. He can do that kind of stuff. He still could, and that's why, you know, I want him to make more movies. I know we potted about him this, but refresh my memory, your favorite? Is it Inglourious Basterds?
I'm not going to reveal, because we have yet to do our Tarantino top film.
I thought we did. We didn't.
No, we never did.
Oh, that's right. We didn't. I got a lot of guff for that. All right, I'm in. All right, I'm in.
I'm not going to reveal it.
Well, yeah, we'll save it. We'll save it.
But yeah, it's what does he make another? Does he end up making a final film, and what's it going to be? Because the critic had cast Paul Walter Hauser in it. Pitt had been recast as Paul Booth. Or Cliff Booth, Paul Booth's the tattoo artist. Cliff Booth, and this was supposed to take place in 1977. So I also wonder if maybe I don't know. What is he gonna do? Does he do a film that ties in a bunch of stuff?
I think, I don't know. I mean, I think he does a film? Yes, I will say yes. Like, I think Tarantino's a little bit like Attitude Era Vince McMahon, where this is probably just all part of one big master ploy, like to just feed the beast of just hype and like, oh, he's not doing this now. Like, I think for sure he's going to do another movie. Like, I just can't picture him not doing it.
Right.
What it is, I don't know, but.
Yeah, it'll be interesting, man. I'm excited. I mean, I was equally as bummed, but also excited. Like, did he get hit with some fucking crazy idea where he's just like, okay, we're not fucking doing the film critic anymore. We're going to fucking do this. Okay. That's what the fuck we're going to do. So I wonder if he did that. If something came to him where he's just like, I need to tie in Pulp Fiction and From Dusk Till Dawn and interweave them.
Imagine if there was some sort of wild, like, and I hate to use the term, like,
universe,
you know, where like
a universe where he ties in all the films.
Yeah, whatever they would call that. Like, I know they do it with those stupid Marvel movies, but where he ties everything together.
I feel like some people would be like, oh, fucking stupid. But also, I feel like if we were watching it and like every movie or every part of the movie, like different parts of the movie, it would tie in one of his films, even if it was like a slight like thing.
Yeah, just like it doesn't have to be a. Yeah, I agree. I mean,
even if they're just like,
where...
oh, you know, my uncle was killed in a bank heist and he was an undercover cop or whatever. You know what I mean? Like, it would be fun. And but I don't know if he's into that kind of self-serving or the audience serving bit. I'm really excited to see what he is going to do.
I mean, if it was up to me, without giving too much away, because we will do, I would just say, just do Kill Bill Volume 3, brother. So
no,
I'll eat that up
no,
all day.
No, no, no,
I'll
no.
I'll eat that up all day.
No, we can't. You can't. No, Carradine's dead.
Yeah, well, he died in the film, too. That's what I mean. We just
yeah, you're
going to
kill Bill, even though Bill's dead.
Well, you could make something work. Come on, now.
Maybe.
How many times Jason Voorhees die?
True, but yeah, it's I'm excited because I think it means something, and I think it means probably something better came along.
Yeah, I mean, who knows? I think him, the idea of him work, everyone he works with is great, but I know how you and I, like, Paul Walter Hauser is the man. That dude is a sick actor, I think. And the idea of them two collaborating is, I think, could be all fucking amazing. So,
yeah.
So hopefully he does something with, you know, if it's not this, the film critic or the movie critic, I hope he works with him, because I think he could get a lot out of him. That dude
I think so too. I've seen him in, I think he's been great. I loved Richard Jewell.
Yeah, he killed Richard Jewell. And then so that Blackbird show. I always tell people about that Blackbird show that was on, where he played that like serial killer type dude. Like, he just was so fucking creepy in that.
He is very underrated, I think. I think for a little while he was written off as like kind of like a comedic like kind of tee hee ha ha chubby guy. But he has got fucking chops.
Agreed. Cool.
So to talk a little bit, let's shift a little. Stephen King news. So I got a couple different Stephen King things to talk about.
Let's hear it.
So on 219, as we know, well, actually before this, we know that Warner Brothers has been deleting, aka erasing films from history. There was the Acme versus Coyote movie,
right,
which was, it seemed fucking kind of brilliant, where like the Coyote took Acme, the magnet company or whatever, to court over all the hijinks of his things. And from what people said, they're like, it was fucking amazing how they did that. And they've erased the film. There's no like sign of it. Like, when I say erased, I mean they deleted whatever digital files there were to never be seen again. And Will Arnett was the lawyer, I think, in this, defending Coyote, I think.
Okay.
But it they've deleted it. It was a made film. Just like they deleted, what was it, Batgirl or whatever the fuck?
It's wild, because that's the era we live in with like film, where there's not like physical.
Yeah.
You're not getting like physical film or anything. So it's really a click of a couple buttons probably, and something's
and it's
gone
forever.
They hold the power. They hold the power.
Now, and they're doing it for tax write-off purposes, because then they get a bunch of money back in taxes. They say, well, yeah, we paid this much for this film, but all this other stuff went into it. Now give us the tax break. Fuck this film. It's really fucked up. It's really unfortunate. And unfortunately, as soon as I heard that, and there was the tie-up with the Salem's Lot remake not being released at all and being pushed back and kind of just in limbo, I thought for sure this was getting control out deleted. And right around about 2 weeks after that, Stephen King tweets, listen, folks, that's me, not Steve. Steve says, between you and me, Twitter, I've seen the new Salem's Lot, and it's quite good. Old school horror filmmaking, slow build, big payoff. Not sure why WB is holding it back. Not like it's embarrassing or anything. Who knows? I just write the fucking things. So that was on 219. On March the 12th, less than a month later, Variety posts, March 12th, 11 a.m. Pacific standard time. Salem's Lot officially skipping movie theaters to stream on Max in 2024. So less than a month later, maybe Stephen King's tweet had something to do with it. He may single-handedly have saved the film with a tweet.
Well, his words carry a lot of weight, so I mean, it could have.
That they do. Thoughts, Eric?
I mean, I think, again, like another thing that's just kind of been of a roller coaster of news and like what's happening and what's not happening. I mean, obviously, I want to see these things happen, so I'm excited if it, you know what I mean? Like,
right.
I just, it's like we always talk about, like when these, it's like what I said earlier, actually, kind of like, do I feel like it had to be made, these things? No, but like, I'm still going to watch it and I'm still excited. So. I mean, I'm sure you feel the same way. You're in the same sentiment.
Yeah, I mean, I just like seeing King's work made. I don't have a huge gripe when things based off novels are remade, because I think more times than not, they're taking some influence from the film that's already made, but they have source material that's not film to go off from. So you're seeing a different adaptation of it when you see a film that's based off a book, even if the prior films that are based off the book influence the new film, it's still based off source material, at least to, you know, in some aspect. So even if they're like, I didn't read the book but I did this, I still want to see it, because they may hit a mark that they didn't even mean to hit in the book but they did. I could go on forever about that, but that's why I wasn't butthurt over the new Pet Sematary. Was it as good as the original Pet Sematary film? No. Was it anywhere near it? No. Was it even as good as Pet Sematary 2? No. But it was fun, and I just liked watching it. Was it made perfectly? No. Was Pet Sematary Bloodlines made perfectly? No. Is there 9 million things I would have done differently to make it scarier and cooler and feel more Maine? Yes, 100%.
Yes.
But...
Well, it's like we always say, though. Like, people expect, like... perfection or something. Like, we're not
gonna
get
you
that,
just gotta you know take I mean? The good with the bad at this point, especially with movies getting deleted. I'm fucking grateful we get them now.
Agreed.
So, relevant Stephen King news. So, back in October, I'm sure you've heard me talk about it on this esteemed format known as a podcast.
Right.
We went me and Ms. Hartgod went to Maine, and we did the Stephen King tours of Maine and had a blast doing that, and went and did saw our own filming locations aside from the ones that were shown to us on the Stephen King's of Maine tour. But the Stephen King's of Maine tour, the guy that runs it, Jamie and his wife, and you can check them out at SK_tours_Maine on Instagram. Him and his wife, Jen, do an amazing job with this tour. It was so much fun. I can't wait to go back, because I'm going to do the private tour. But they really are a wealth of knowledge. And they have, you know, Jamie grew up right around the street from Stephen King. And his father opened the very first bookstore in Bangor. And Stephen King did his very first ever book signing ever of his life in that very store. So Jamie has very close ties to Stephen King, and obviously Bangor being a lifelong resident, and knows more about Stephen King and Maine than you will ever want to know. And I literally think about that Maine trip every day since I've been there, because Maine is beautiful. I love Stephen King, and it was the most fun I've had in a long time. But
I know that trip was so awesome for you guys.
Yeah, a bucket list shit for sure. But Jamie and Jennifer of SK Tours of Maine bought the thinner Cadillac Fleetwood 75, the 1960 Cadillac Fleetwood 75 from the movie The Thinner.
That's sick.
And they are restoring it. And if you know anything about them, I believe, because they have some vehicles, they have big, you know, a nice bus and stuff, and then they have a smaller vehicle that's for the private tours. I think they'll probably end up using this possibly for the private tour. But they bought the 1960 Cadillac Fleetwood 75. And they do have a GoFundMe right now. I'm not a big fan of GoFundMes, but when it has to do with Stephen King, I'm all for it.
Exactly. When they're legitimate.
they're trying to raise some money to get this old caddy fixed up from thinner so they can use it, and at the very least have it displayed out in front of the SK Tour's main headquarters, which is literally right down the street from Stephen King's big house with the, you know, the big gate and the fence and the gargoyles and all that shit. And Jamie grew up right down the street from him. And yeah, this is, I mean, if you're in Maine, needless to say, you need to go on the SK Tours of Maine. We're gonna post this too in the post when we post the
episode. I was gonna say, we definitely got a link to that for sure.
Yeah, but they have $720 raised that I see right now. Maybe it's more, but by now, but yeah, they're very cool. And yeah, if you're ever in Maine, holy fuck, you need to go there, because it was the most fun. That doing Salem and then being able to do that right after, I think back at that time period, and it's so much fun.
Yeah, I mean, just to get to go to places that mean so much to you, you know, from films you love, is a really cool thing. Like, I know you guys have been planning that trip for a long time, and I wish I could have been there with you guys, but it's so rad.
Well, one day I hope we can all go and do a private tour of the thing, because, and I know I've talked about it on here too, but man, going to the Micmac, the filming where they did the Micmac grounds, which was an old burial, or an old blueberry field, where they have the rock formation still up and stuff. And I know I talked about it before, but Bridget got scared in broad daylight. That's how scary that is.
I forgot about it. Well, anytime you're in a, I guess if you know, like, I know it's a movie, but the backstories of the movies, and you're there and it's quiet.
Oh, for sure.
Because you said there was nobody around, right?
No, it was, that's the thing. You could hear, like, it was like cloudy too. Yeah. Like, it took us a minute to figure out where this was, because we had watched other videos trying to figure out where exactly it was. And I had the coordinates, but from where you're looking at, it's just off like a little, like, kind of like backwoods highway. And we kind of had to park kind of by a ravine and then walk across the road.
Right.
And I was just like, I think this is it. And it was quite a hike to get to the top of it, but we heard the birds and you heard like wildlife a little bit, and it was cloudy too. It looked like it was almost going to rain. And then once we got to the top of like the stone ground that was the Micmac ground in the movie, the sun came. It was like beautiful but creepy, because the sun came out, the sky turned blue, the sun came out, and it got completely dead silent. Like, when I say dead silent, you couldn't hear a fucking thing. And it was awesome and creepy at the same time.
That is super creepy. For even like, yeah, like it's gonna, that would creep you out in the middle of the day for sure. I guess the note when you know that you're like kind of alone too is always a creepy feeling. So
yeah, it was so much fun. And then finding the rock formations where Lewis and Judd were climbing up the fucking thing, literally trying to almost breaking my fucking neck. yeah,
hey,
just
you gotta risk it.
Yeah, I had to risk it. So much fun, but yeah, we got some cons coming up too, Eric. We got I'm hitting New Jersey Horror Con this weekend, which I'm really pumped for, and I know we're talking about hitting New Jersey Horror Con in August too. They're doing a Night of the Demon reunion there, which I'm very excited for.
I think, yeah, that's going to be a lot of fun, just because that movie is like fucking one of the goats. And
it's
like,
it's a grail film for us.
It doesn't get like a lot of, I mean, people love it, but like, you don't see like reunions like that. So this could be really rad.
Yeah.
Did meet all the hell that one random time at that,
at Pennhurst.
At
so random.
Pennhurst, which is going to be hilarious bring that up to him, because I was the only person who probably, I mean, I would like to think more people recognized him, but he's just sitting at his table by himself. And I was
just
like, holy
chilling.
Fuck, what the hell happened? And he was the nicest dude. So that's going to be really awesome. But yeah, tell the people who you're planning on meeting this weekend in Jersey.
In Addison, New Jersey. I'm gonna knock off a few more Lost Boys cast members. We got Chance Michael Corbett, who played Laddie, G-Tom Mack, who did the soundtrack, obviously wrote Cry Little Sister, one of the GOAT tracks of all time. And and Jameson Newlander, who played Alan Frog.
It's amazing.
So, you know, I got a poster right now with Jason Patrick, Kiefer, Alex Winter, and Billy Worth on it. So there's only two living cast members on that poster that I don't have autographs from. And it's Chance Michael Corbett, who I will be eliminating from that list this weekend, and billionaire Atlanta Hawks owner Jamie Gertz, who I don't plan on meeting because I don't think she needs that con money.
You need to like go to somehow work your way down to a Hawks game and see if she can
I know, just
one
poach
of the
out in front of the fucking Hawks arena and just see if I can't get also it'd be a little bit of a feat to hold a full length movie poster outside of Atlanta
yeah,
Hawks.
Just have your big ass.
Like, did you see that fat blonde guy out front? He's got a big Lost Boys poster. He keeps trying to flag Jamie down every time she comes in.
I wonder how many games she gets to. I bet she gets to a lot.
I don't know.
That's an idea, though. It's an idea.
It's not a bad idea, I'll tell you that.
She probably would be pumped. Just like, this person wants me to sign this Lost Boys poster at the Hawks game? I'm in.
That's what I'm saying. Like, can I get... I want it to happen so bad, but I don't think she's doing any kind of panels for Solar Babies anytime soon. So I don't think. call me crazy. Maybe she's gonna be in the new Twister.
There you go. I always think about that. I don't want to get too much in the weeds, but like, there's just like so many people who are actors or actresses that did, you know, a handful of movies. They're recognizable, and then they're just like, then they're just gone. And it's just, you know what I mean? It's just such a weird thing.
Yeah.
Like,
it's
just these people who are in like, they're, oh, I did like 15 movies in the 80s. And like, they were big movies, but it's just like, you're gone. And you just don't get asked. It's weird how there's just waves. You have those actors and actresses who act forever. Then you have some that are just big for a time, and then they're just, you just don't see them again. It's weird.
The waves, man, the waves. Also, she was in Less Than Zero, which is classic, but also one of her best
Less
roles.
Than Zero, great.
One
of the greatest soundtracks ever.
Oh, yeah.
Less Than Zero.
Also, another great role for her was Marlo Klein, Aaron Drew Klein's wife in Entourage.
Forgot about that shit. she is in Entourage.
So good.
Marlo.
Doing the entourage. Let's before we exit out. This is a quick little episode, and this is just fun to reconnect and just bullshit. Reconnect with the fans. That is, we're connected daily, obviously. But
exactly.
But what are you watching right now, Eric? As you know, I told you I've been restarted Entourage. I watch Entourage at least once a year. So I restarted that, and we just started this Baby Reindeer show. We're like an episode and a half in, and it's really
what's that all about.
It's like this guy, it's based on a true story, and it's a British film or British docu or not docu series, British series. And it's based off a true story where this guy who is a bartender meets this woman, and this woman becomes obsessed with him and starts stalking him. And he doesn't know. That's as far as I've gotten right now. And he's unsure how to shake her. And she's clearly clinically insane, but he is also kind of intrigued by her stalking.
Is this on Netflix?
Yep.
Yeah, Netflix must have just recently picked, like in the last couple of months, picked up so much British stuff, because there's all these random British like drama and like crime shows on there now. You notice that?
Yeah.
We watched one a couple months ago, and I just
I'm here for the tea, the crumpets, and the TV shows.
But television shows, I guess that we obviously were watching Curb Your Enthusiasm. That's sadly over.
R.I.P.
That
Great.
Ended. We, you know, it's tough, and I know you go through the same thing as my wife. I can barely ever get her to watch a movie, but she'll watch a television show like nothing. It could be an hour and a half.
Yep.
We can watch two fucking episodes a night of an hour long television show, but she won't watch a movie that would be less than that, probably.
Yep.
Anyway, there's a show on HBO called Tokyo Vice that I was a big fan of. That one just ended the season. I just finished that. Show called Shogun on FX. Really good. I'm just trying. We watched Reacher. I don't know if anyone's into like just super action, cheesy, gore at times, Reacher, based off of the Tom Cruise movies, Jack Reacher, which I think are based off of books, but that was pretty wild. But yeah, I mean, that's really it, I think, movie or show wise. So
yeah, I've picked up a bunch of movies recently and ready to dive in. I'm going to watch Draft Day this weekend to get ready for the NFL draft.
Yes. Everyone listening, Jesse and I are big. We are sports fans, big sports fans, and
yes, sir,
big football fans. So yeah, the draft coming up. Draft Day is hilarious to me. I saw it in theaters, but I've seen it a few times since, and it's like it's so unrealistic, but it's just hilarious. Kevin Costner's the man. It has an all-star cast. Dennis Leary and what the his father is escaping me. Who plays his or plays the owner of the team? Frank something. Langella maybe?
Yeah, Frank Langella, a brain scan fan.
Exactly. He plays like the owner of the team. It's a fun movie if you're a sports, especially if you're a football fan. So that's cool. Yeah, you just got a haul from Amazon, right?
Yeah, I got a bunch of Costner movies.
But Costner kind of a goat. He's been in a lot of great
things. Oh yeah, a definite goat for sure. I grabbed all but Bull Durham. I still need to grab Bull Durham.
Bull fucking Durham. Crash Davis. It's a great flick. That's cool. Yeah, we definitely got a pod. So we're gonna pod next week on Kickboxer. It's gonna be awesome.
Yeah, that one's gonna be fun. We got a full house. That one's gonna come out next week. This one should be dropping hopefully soon. But yeah, let's keep it going. This is fun. But yeah, man.
Oh, yeah.
We'll be connecting with the audience again on Kickboxer. This has been the Sight and Sound Podcast. You can find us at Heart God Media on Instagram. And yeah, hit us up. Let us know what you think of all this news that we just discussed. And yeah, we'll see you soon for the Kickboxer episode.